myths of individuals undergoing heroic adventures as they attempt to actualize their higher potentials and find their own unique pathway to bliss are abundant in many cultures throughout history. While these myths vary in detail depending on their time and place of origin, they share a common pattern, which Joseph Campbell coined the myth of the hero's journey. In myths which follow the pattern of the hero's journey, the hero ventures forth from a familiar world into strange and sometimes threatening lands, be it a passage into the desert, a dark forest, or an adventure into the deep ocean. Campbell proposed we view this as symbolic of the individual's departure from their conscious personality into the unexplored regions of their unconscious, in search of the ultimate boon, the unrealized potentials hidden within. We'll briefly trace the pattern of the hero's journey, noting its relevancy to those who, feeling lost and disoriented in life, could benefit from venturing forth into their unexplored unconscious psyche. The hero's journey always begins with a call to adventure. In myths, this call is often personified as an animal the hero encounters, symbolic of one's instincts or gut feelings, which are insightful but too often ignored, in the words of Campbell. Often in actual life, and not infrequently in the myths and popular tales, we encounter the dull case of the call unanswered, for it is always possible to turn the ear to other interests. Refusal of the summons converts the adventure into its negative. Walled in boredom, hard work, or culture, the subject loses the power of significant affirmative action and becomes a victim to be saved. While the call is often initially refused, not all who hesitate are lost. There are forces within which understand the importance of the adventure and act to ensure the call does not remain unanswered forever. In myths, these forces are often personified as supernatural helpers. In fairy lore, it may be some little fellow of the wood, some wizard, hermit, shepherd, or smith who appears to supply the amulets and advice that the hero will require. The higher mythologies develop the role of the great figure of the guide, the teacher, the ferryman, the conductors of souls to the afterworld. Assisted by internal forces, the hero eventually answers the call to adventure and ventures off into unknown territory. At the boundary of the familiar and unexplored regions, the hero encounters the threshold guardian. In myths, this guardian is often a menacing being or Mephistophelian figure, which represents one's shadow, the portion of one's personality which has been rejected over time and thus relegated to the surface layers of the unconscious. In myths, the threshold guardian instills panic among those unprepared to meet him. Just as in real life, confronting one's rejected personality can be difficult and distressing. Yet if one finds a way to accept their rejected personality, one gains access to an inner strength which will be of assistance as one descends into the deeper and sometimes threatening layers of the unconscious, as Campbell explained. And so it happens that if anyone undertakes for himself the perilous journey into the darkness by descending, either intentionally or unintentionally, into the crooked lanes of his own spiritual labyrinth, he soon finds himself in a landscape of symbolical figures, any one of which may swallow him. Descending deeper and deeper into the psyche, overcoming trials and experiencing moments of ecstatic insight, eventually one's previous self begins to disintegrate, and a new, more impressive self begins to form. In myths, this stage is symbolized as a death and rebirth, in which the hero enters a dark area such as the belly of a whale, a tomb, or dark cave, and after a period of time, emerges from it reborn. Reborn with a new sense of strength and purpose, the ultimate boon, or unrealized potential within, is discovered soon after. Finding the ultimate boon is described in different myths in a variety of ways, yet it is always meant to signify an expansion of consciousness and therewith of being. Illumination, transfiguration, freedom. While the discovery of the unrealized potentials within is a highly significant moment, it is not the end of the journey. One still must determine how to nourish these potentials and bring them forth in the world. This can be exceedingly difficult, as Campbell explained. The whole idea is that you've got to bring out again that which you went to recover, the unrealized, unutilized potential in yourself. The whole point of this journey is the reintroduction of this potential into the world. It goes without saying this is very difficult. Bringing the boon back can be even more difficult than going down into your own depths in the first place. As you attempt to bring forth your potential into the world, there's the possibility that nobody will care or pay attention. There is also the possibility that the applause of others will divert you from your authentic path, leading to a life of mimicry or enslavement to the opinions of others. The optimal possibility is to carve out your own corner of the world. where you can nourish your potential and offer your work to others without concern of applause or fear of rejection. In doing so, you will have found your own unique pathway to bliss, and your life will have followed the thread of the hero's journey. What I think is that a good life is one hero journey after another. Over and over again, you are called to the realm of adventure. You are called to new horizons. Each time, there is the same problem. Do I dare? And then if you do dare, the dangers are there, and the help also, in the fulfillment or the fiasco. There's always the possibility of a fiasco, but there's also the possibility of bliss.
Shall we go, you and I, while we can?
Welcome to the School Sucks Project,
a podcast, YouTube channel, and an online community
dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives,
home education,
critical thinking,
peaceful parenting,
organization and productivity,
and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get
infographics,
comprehensive show notes,
relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at @schoolsucksshow.
Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast,
and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Is this person being reluctant? We're literally giving them all the tools. So what is the fear? What is that point of fear that we are missing here with that young hero? What is it right now? Is it something going on at home? Is it something? What is it? Like, we're consistently having that conversation, and the answers sometimes to get them unstuck are not the same.
Yeah. It is kind of like a self-directed, like self-chosen, intrinsically yes. motivated systems installation kind of thing where you go to school. It's like, tough luck, buddy. These are the systems we're installing. But yeah. with self-awareness and like bringing that stuff out, being conscious of that stuff and saying, yep. where do you want to go? What do you want to do? More importantly, like, how do you want to feel? Because yeah. having good systems in place at the end of the day, you know, yep. think about just the building blocks that days are towards the future. Yep. At the end of the right. day, if you follow systems that are self-nurturing and yep. self-honoring, you go to bed and you go, geez, that was a great day. And you string a few yes. of those together, and then those systems become ingrained.
And that's it. And yeah. things start to change. You know, we always tell our young heroes, look, you are consistently being brainwashed by somebody. Whether yeah. it's your parents, whether it's your friends, whether it's the media, whether it's social media, whether it's the culture, or it's you.
Yeah.
Might as well make it you. Might as well pick and choose exactly what that brainwash looks like and make that brainwash exactly the, you know, have it come from the person that you want to be, and those pieces, components of others that you like that you want to integrate in yourself, have those be the things that are brainwashing you every single day.
This is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is Monday, January 25th, 2021. Very pleased to welcome back to the show, Matt Beaudreau. Matt is the host of the absolutely outstanding Essential 11 podcast. We're going to be talking about that early on in our conversation. He is also the founder of the Acton Academy in Placer County, California. Matt is also a very sought after public speaker. You can Google his name and find a TED Talk, a very shareable TED Talk that he gave 5 years ago. But I highly recommend checking out his more recent work, like The Essential 11, and this conversation that you're just moments away from hearing. We really do it all in this one. Our last conversation a few months back was kind of like an introduction to Matt. We compared notes regarding our careers. We found some interesting similarities. And I said, Matt, please come back and let's do a deeper dive on this idea of the hero's journey for teens. Part of the Acton Academy mission, the promises they make to the young people who enrolled there, is that he or she will begin a hero's journey, learn to be a curious, independent, lifelong learner, develop a deep respect for economic, political, and religious freedoms, cherish the arts, the wonders of the physical world, and the mysteries of life on Earth, and discover his or her most precious gifts and learn to use them to solve difficult problems. Very well aligned, I like to think, with what we do here at School Sucks Project. So in the process of talking about this hero's journey, not really just for teens, I think, just like the show we did with Zach, yeah, let's talk to young people. But this is the kind of thing that lots of people out there could use. So I hope you are in that category, lots of people. And some additional explorations here include goals versus systems. We talk about a book by James Clear called Atomic Habits and how the habit and systems installation process works with ACT and learners, young heroes, as Matt calls them. I love that. And check the show notes because we hit several other topics as well. Also, 1 week from today, goodbye Facebook for me. I am deleting my personal profile. The School Sucks Facebook group with its 3,000 plus members will no longer exist. For the time being, I'm keeping my Instagram because I do not have another outlet for my videos where I talk to animals. And that's really important to me to talk to animals. And it's not some kind of like hammy. You remember that Saturday Night Live skit with Mark Wahlberg? Andy Samberg plays Mark Wahlberg talking to animals. This is me putting like the serious questions to animals that you've always wanted to ask that have kept you up at night. And you've always just said, what's the point? It's an animal. But my philosophy is if we just keep saying, what's the point of talking to animals, are we ever going to get the answers from them that we all deserve? So that's on my Instagram, School Sucks Project. You do want to follow me and the School Sucks. It's all one account, School Sucks Project, on Instagram. It is going to be a life enhancement for most people who do it. And you also get updates about podcasts and bonus shows there as well. But as you heard in the previous podcast called MySpace, we have a plan for how to build a community off these rented land platforms like Facebook. We're even looking at this point beyond Discord, where we currently are. That is built. It is growing. It's going great. We're bringing new people in. I'm really excited about how all this is working so far. And you can also find instructions in these show notes for this particular episode on how you might be able to become a part of our new, more exclusive community. We had a lively conversation, one of our largest University Weekly discussion groups yesterday. And I look forward to that expanding. I look forward to building that platform out and really customizing it to the needs of the growing group. So it's not too late yet to get involved, but I'm already thinking like 300 people, that might be too much for the kind of connection that I want there. You know, I was also thinking too, I'm going to tell you this. There's like a list of people that I really want to be in this community, which starts on Discord, and then I think we're going to move it off to even Discord is getting a little sketchy by my standards at this point. But I was like, I'm going to make a list of 25 people and send them invites. Say, hey, I know this is an investment, but I want you there. Let's talk. Two of the people on my list already must have received that message telepathically and signed up on their own without me saying a word to them. So that was quite magical. Sometimes things are magical. But that's it about that. If you want the long form explanation, it is in the previous podcast, 697 MySpace. Also, if you're a patron, I put up a walkthrough video of some of what we're building in this platform. I encourage you to go check that out if you haven't seen it yet. So that's it. Here is my conversation with the great Matt Beaudreau. Remember to look in the show notes for Matt's links if you want to learn more about him. Definitely remember to add Essential 11 to your pod catcher. Some really like casual but amazing interviews with some very, very impressive people on Essential 11. I highly recommend it. And boy, am I excited to share this conversation with you. Thank you so much for listening. Here we go.
If you see your brother standing by the road with a heavy load from the seeds he sowed, and if you see your sister falling by the way, just stop and say, you're going the wrong way. And if you try a little kindness, then you'll overlook the blindness. Narrow-minded people on the narrow-minded street.
Matt, it is a pleasure to have you back.
Pleasure to be here, sir. Always good to chat with you, bud.
So we're doing this, is worth pointing out, on January 20th. Is really important for the conversation we're going to have. I mean, you and I have been at this for a long time, giving advice to younger people. Yeah. And we can say things like, you know, in 2008, I did this.
Yeah.
We might have made a lot of rules for ourselves that don't apply anymore. So before we get started, I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on where we're at and what you think happens next.
That's a great question. I mean, and those things go together on kind of my thoughts, especially as they pertain to young people and then where we go next. I think we are in, you know, as we're sitting here on inauguration day, we're in a weird world, man. And, you know, we've had a lot of conversations with our students, both here at Acton and in the Apogee program and all the young people that I get to connect with around the world. And everybody's kind of in this, that same question. It's like, well, what happens next? What do we do? What happens next? Here's the thing, man. We don't know. We don't, if you and I had this conversation a year ago, we didn't know how the whole COVID thing was going to play out. We had no idea that we were going to be in this weird world of, you know, Trump versus Biden and the Capitol storming. And, you know, it's the separation that we are seeing of the pro-Trump or the anti-Trump, or, you know, everybody's picking, like, what do I worry about next? What do I blame next for whatever is going on in my life? We don't know. We can't foresee the future. So, you know, I always bring it back to controlling what we can control. You know, I woke up today, man, and I'm happy. Politics never has anything to do with it for me. You know, the health situation of the world, the pandemic, whether you're like, oh, we got to wear masks, we don't have to wear masks, everybody's got to get vaccinated, nobody should get vaccinated. None of that plays into me deterring from my mission of getting up and the way I take care and show up for, you know, show up for my wife and show up for my kids in the morning, the way I come in and pour into these young people and express them that they should be proactive on their journey versus reactive. And I think what you and I are seeing, what everybody is seeing, is that the majority of the world has fallen into a trap of being reactive.
Yeah.
It's a right. Like, this is the emotional reactions to whatever is going on. And then, you know, now, okay, so I have to react in this way and I only have certain options. And I mean, I live my life proactively. I turn off the news. I'm aware of what's going on, but I live proactively and push my mission forward. And I'm ready to adapt at any time. And that's the mindset that I want for our young people as well.
Okay. So here, there's a question there about balance too. And I put this question to Isaac Morehouse.
Yeah.
A few months back, right? In a less stressful world, we did a show called All News is Fake News.
Yeah.
And I, by the way, also did like a complete news and social media blackout, aside to like post like, hey, new show, but
sure.
wasn't scrolling or wasn't watching YouTube. I did it for a month.
Yeah.
Finding the balance, right, of needing to know enough about what's going on, but not getting sucked in. I mean, there's been definitely a couple of points, like around the election was actually when I managed to start tuning out a little bit. Mm-hmm. But December was a great, very serene month for me, completely disconnected from all that stuff. I had to check back in a little bit. Like, I sucked in January 6th when all that stuff happened. I watched a YouTube video or two today. I'm doing a pretty good job with it. But what does that balance look like for you as far as like, all right, I need to know enough, especially when there's like various forms of like self-protection involved in what's going on, but staying output focused or you focused in these situations.
Yeah. You said the word serene, you know, and you were talking about the blackout being this serene month. For me, the balance, because I'm not a huge, you know, about the way I live my life, you know, people wouldn't look at it and say, well, there's a lot of balance because I think people look at the balance in terms of output versus, you know, relaxation, you know, amount of time working versus amount of time not working, or some people working versus playing, or and for me, the balance is the serenity. It's what you mentioned. So for me, balance is just my peace of mind. Right. If I am diving too far down a rabbit hole where all of a sudden my peace of mind starts to get disrupted, and all that means is that I start to worry about something that's out of my control, that's where I immediately stop and have to get out. You know, I mean, that's really it for me. So I think different people have different levels of that. But, you know, that balance for me is that being proactive is what keeps my peace of mind intact. I will, you know, take a look at what's going on. But I had a great conversation with, it was a kind of a DM sort of conversation with TK Coleman. The way I framed it for him, I'm like, look, the way I look at my life is I've already, it's kind of like watching a movie but you've already read the book, right? So, and then you're watching this movie, and maybe you're watching it with people who have never read the book. They've never watched the movie, and it's a scary movie. And all of a sudden, there's the scary stuff starts happening, and everybody starts freaking out, and everybody's getting scared, and everybody's getting worried. But, you know, as I sit back and go, okay, well, I've already read the book, so I know what the ending is, so I'm not really worried about it. I can appreciate these moments, but I'm not. That's kind of how I look at life in general,
mm-hmm.
is that I've already read the end of the book. I know that I'm going to go through this life, and I'm going to have some struggles. I'm going to have some hardship, and there's going to be some things that happen that I have no control over, that I didn't realize was going to happen. All of those things are going to take place, period, end of story. If you're trying to do anything worthwhile, you're going to have some hardships, some struggles, some things to come up against. So I have already come to peace with that and do everything that I can to be as prepared for whatever it is that I can be. I mean, I can only do so much. I'm going to keep myself physically in shape. So mm-hmm. I always keep myself physically healthy. Like it doesn't matter if there's another pandemic or if all of a sudden I have to run away from a burning building or all of a sudden I have to confront an attacker. Like I'm as prepared as I'm going to be for any of those situations by taking care of my physical health. My financial health is the same thing. The health of the relationships of the people around me, I pour into those every single day so that they're at their strongest possible position, always being ready to adapt to something if I need to. So I've already read the book. So whatever happens with this, whatever happened with Trump or Biden, I didn't care. I completely didn't care because I don't get to see the end of that story. I'm not controlling any of that. All I know is I'm going to do what I can do no matter which way the wind blows. And that's how I look at everything in life. I'm not, I don't let myself get saddened by it. It's not an emotional reaction. I try to stay as stoic as possible and all that kind of stuff, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. So that's kind of like a statement about purpose.
Mm-hmm.
I love the metaphor. That works, except if the book is The Shining, everybody, because the movie just goes completely off the rails in all kinds of ways. But I get that. And would you say that that is actually like about having a purpose and kind of reverse engineering from like where you are right now to thinking about that and focusing on that? And what does that look like?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly it. For a lot of people that find their, you know, and wherever anybody is on this, for some it's, you know, it's kind of this spiritual purpose and, but people espouse that, but then their actions don't necessarily a lot of times match up with that. For some, it is the work that they do. For me, it's truly is a combination of both. There is a spirituality that is an important part of my life where, again, I feel like I've already kind of read the end of the book, seen the end of the journey. My purpose as well, somebody asked me on a podcast not too long ago, I said, well, what is kind of the career goal at this point? Like, what do you have? And I'm honestly, man, I've already, everything now is extra for me.
Yeah.
Like I've already done, you know, what I wanted to do. So I feel like at this point, every single thing I get to do, every person I get to pour into, every conversation I get to have is just icing on the cake. So I don't have any, you know, I don't have anything I'm chasing. I just literally get to live and breathe my purpose of helping, you know, young people become the best thing they can, being the Morpheus to as many Neos as I can, right? Just continuously opening doors for young people. And I've already far surpassed anything I thought I'd ever get to do. So, you know, there's just so much peace and just waking up every day going, cool, who else can I help?
And how do you help young people? So we talked in the last time you were here, and I'll definitely reference all this in the monologue before the show about, you know, the work with Acton Academy in Placer County, California, where you are. But, you know, that mindset, you're talking a lot about mindset, which I think is a really, really important thing. And it's tricky in different situations to be, I mean, I've found this, I assume other people can identify with this, to be a guardian of mindset, right? Like there are circumstances, there are triggers or situations or invitations to go on autopilot where, you know, you can slip away from what is the healthiest mindset for you. So I think in addition to being in being a guardian of the healthiest mindset is being conscious of it. So how do you foster that in young people? And how do you, if they don't have it, how do you help them kind of install it?
Yeah, for sure. That's the practicality of it. And everybody, you know, we live in obviously in 2021, one of the popular terms right now that I absolutely hate is the life hack, right? Everybody wants to hack this and hack that.
Everybody wants everything to be as easy as possible.
what's a hack to the mindset? And I don't think it's a hack. I think it's something that is, I think it is something that is simple. It's not easy, but it's simple. And I don't want to, you know, say that it's not a multifaceted kind of thing, because it is. You know, I work with young people, whether it's here on campus. I've got my groups that I meet with through Apogee every week, that are, you know, these young men are quite literally all over the world, from California to Dubai to Africa to, I mean, we've got young men all over the world. And everybody's got their scenarios in parenting that they're growing up with, and how much that plays into whatever culture they are currently in. All of that plays into the mindset. So I don't want to downgrade any of that. Mm-hmm. But for me to instill that with these young people, the best tool I can give them is a reason to take action. It's an audit of their time. The best protection sometimes of the mindset is to not give yourself any downtime. Whereas if your mind isn't super strong, you can start to go spiral. You can start to go down the rabbit hole. You can start to give yourself the opportunity to check out. It's the auditing of time. You know, and as I've worked with, again, being so fortunate, man, I've worked with over 300 companies these last, you know, 6-7 years. And one of the things I realized is that the auditing of time and taking care of your time, protecting your time, is something adults really suck at. So of course the majority of our kids suck at it too. So one of the things that we implement here at Acton, that I implement with the Apogee program for the young men we mentor, is a mod schedule. And it's a mod schedule that I use for myself, that literally for me starts at 4 a.m., ends at 9:30 p.m., 7 days a week. That is my schedule. And I map my day out in 20-minute blocks. And people go, that sounds crazy. That sounds maniacal. I have the most genuine interactions. I work circles around most people. I have all of those things. And I think a big part of that is because I have that time dialed in to a T. There is no idle time unless I plan idle time. And I plan exactly what that idle time looks like. I don't have, at this point, the opportunity to go down a rabbit hole that I don't want to go down. That's not going to be productive. Mm-hmm. Right? I eliminate and avoid all of those distractions by planning something else in their place. And now it's just second nature for me. That's the one of the best things we've seen of getting young people in the habit of developing that mindset is really auditing that time.
Okay, so we mentioned this the last time you were on the show, and let's just tangent here. Let's see what happens. We didn't do it last time, but I've got questions now. You piqued my curiosity with the 20-minute thing before. Mm-hmm. I usually just block by hours because I get kind of like, if I see something on a calendar starting at 9:35, I'm just 9:35 is kind of a gross time to start a thing, right? Yeah. Like a 50-minute work sprint followed by a 10-minute get out of your chair, walk around. That's worked pretty well for me. Cool. But you know, there are days where, okay, something's got to get done and it gets thrown off. And I try to be honest and adjust like the calendar to also be a reflection of what happened that day, not an idealized version. If I look back at Wednesday on Thursday, but how'd you come up with the 20 minutes, and what was right about 20 minutes for you with the way you work? Because you think about like Cal Newport's deep work idea or the work sprint idea when you really have to get into something in a more focused way. So why the 20 minute blocks? Where did that come from?
Yeah, and that was kind of just a product of what my own schedule consistently looked at and looked like. So I'm not saying that 20 minutes is necessarily the ideal or it's a magic formula, it's a magic number. It was easy for me to break down an entire hour into that. Whereas, you know, my workouts could be 40 minutes and 20. I mean, that literally was how it kind of started, was with the workout, because that's the first thing I, you know, we'll take on in the morning. Is I have, you know, some reading that I do while I'm drinking my coffee. And I would always do that for an hour. And I literally started breaking it up that way. So it was like, okay, I'd start out having coffee. The last 20 minutes of that hour, I was having my coffee in a sauna, and that's how I was starting. And then that 5 to 6 hour was going to be my workout. So it just made it easier based on something I was already doing. Mm-hmm. And so it just kind of morphed from there. And really the only modification that I make to that is I will intentionally schedule my have to's as early as I can during the day. And I just put a star by it on my mod schedule, say, look, like, this is a non-negotiable, this has to get done today. And so if that ends up taking the place of something else, you know, within that schedule, I will literally write it in. I will move that to another block. I keep it very, very simple. There's no magic formula for me. That's just what ends up working out, honestly, for my schedule, starting with that workout and that morning ritual, morning routine.
This is something that came up in a private conversation. I have a mastermind group, and it was not this Monday, but last Monday, somebody's hot seat, their pain point was around goals. And I wonder if you consider yourself more of a goals person or a systems person. I read a blog that Scott Adams wrote about this recently, and obviously I think this relates to, like, the conversation that we had in this private group was so thought-provoking, I immediately went out and read James Clear's Atomic Habits book, which I had never read for some reason. I mean, we've talked about this on my show plenty, but I mean, I thought a lot of it was, you know, review based on the work I'd done. So I sped through it like just in a couple of days and grabbed the key concepts. But yeah, I mean, as Scott Adams lays it out, and there's a blog I can, people could just search Scott Adams goals versus systems and find this. Being more systems oriented or being more, and I guess the thing is like goals are often not achieved. They're often not achieved. So focus on systems that will move you towards these things that you were hoping would just have a gravity that would pull you in that direction as a goal. But where do you come down on that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think I used to be more goal-centered, and that did work for me in the sense that I was obsessive about those goals. What didn't work for me was the time I would waste and spend in pursuit of those goals, which then led me to become more systems oriented. So I would say now I am much more of a systems guy. I love James Clear's book I enjoyed that quite a bit. I actually have included that in the Apogee program. That is one of the required readings for the young men that I mentor in their second month. That's what they read. I'm much more of a systems guy now. And part of it is to remove that maniacal, lack of discipline around the goals. It was to impart a discipline upon myself. But part of it too is because, kind of like I mentioned earlier, I've actually reached the majority of the kind of those esoteric goals that I had for myself. I'm there. I got to do, you know, the things that I wanted to do. So now it's everything is extra, and systems are what kind of helped me to just continue to be able to kind of grow and do these extra things that I didn't even realize were going to be on my plate.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, we're about the same age, and I'm kind of like looking back at like, oh, I've done all these really cool things. And there's this nice kind of platform of cool things that I've done that, you know, when my career started, I thought if I want to meet these needs, right. Cause the purpose of life is to enjoy it. Right. So if I want to enjoy my day in and day out, I'm going to have to go get a teaching certificate, like to find this meaning or to find this like satisfaction in life. I'm going to have to go get a teaching certificate. I'm going to have to get a job at a public school. I'm going to have to, you know, like that was the 20 years ago, the options were so narrow as far as like getting those needs met and, you know, finding, being fortunate to trying to meet those needs in these times and having all these cool opportunities for how to do it and connecting with, you know, hundreds of people like on a first name basis and thousands of people on like, you know, a content creation basis has been just amazing. But, you know, I'm also looking forward and saying I played it safe a lot. You know, there's a lot like bolder things that I'd like to do. And I'm grateful for the foundation that I have, but it's always hard to like let the words I'm nowhere near where I want to be come out of your mouth. You don't want to say that because it's not, it doesn't sound grateful. I mean, it's like I have a purpose and I've developed systems to kind of like move in the direction of that purpose. But there is still like a linkage problem sometimes that I think a lot of people encounter where it's like, I know what I'm supposed to do. You know, I know why I'm here. I get that. But I'm not attacking it.
Then you got to audit your time. I mean, that's really what it comes to, you know, and again, maybe that's not the answer for it, but that was absolutely the answer for me is auditing the time. If you are not moving towards it, then where are you missing the boat? What is it during your day? What is it during your week? Where is it that you are foregoing that? You know, that was, again, when I talk about I was obsessed with those goals. It was, I woke up and I was on top of those goals and I didn't go to sleep until I couldn't do anything else, you know? And it was literally an obsession of making sure I got to. And again, I don't think that was the healthiest measure, but the reality was I didn't waste time.
Mm-hmm. So there's another kind of negotiation that you have to do between time and energy, which I've started to feel like is more important than time. So I want to hear your thoughts about this. But I remember having like Tom Woods was on the show. This was like maybe four years ago. And we were down in Connecticut and we were interviewing after he spoke at Yale. And I said, Tom, how do you do it? You know, how did you create, you know, the Liberty Classroom and all that? He said something like, I'm paraphrasing, I literally almost killed myself. I literally almost worked myself to death doing that.
Totally.
To me, that, you know, and I said the same to him at the time. I said, that sounds very unappealing.
Yeah.
So, and this is a, we do a bonus show at School Sucks just for like supporting listeners. It's called The Discomfort Zone, where we talk a lot about these kind of topics. And my co-host, my friend Andrew, we got into an argument about this last year where, you know, I said, you can't force it, right? Just because it's this block of time is for this thing, you really also have to be auditing your energy effectively.
Sure.
Like, I will have to force something later into the day just because of circumstances. And if it's something that I'm usually hitting at 6 or 7 a.m., I'm not hitting it the same way at 4 or 5 p.m. in the afternoon. So what about the energy piece? I mean, I guess that has to become part of the equation.
Yeah, it definitely becomes part of the equation. I totally, when you said what Tom said, you know, I almost killed myself. It resonated so much with me. I think, you know, like you said, you and I are about the same age. I probably look 15 years older with all the gray in my beard. And I think that's
it's kids.
Dude, and kids. Yeah, that's right. That's right. Thank you. but, you know, because I did, you know, damn near kill myself over a relatively, in the grand scheme of things, short period of 6 or 7 years. But that's also, you know, a couple thousand days of going really, really hard to get to ultimately where I wanted to be. And it was a conscious sacrifice. It was very much to me, you know, metaphorically speaking, it was like, okay, you got a mile to run. You can jog it and get to that same mile in 10, 12 minutes, or you can hustle and you can be there in under 5. Mm-hmm. One has a much greater energy output, obviously, right at the onset. And there's the lingering effects of having to sprint, and it's painful. It's painful to sprint. Mm-hmm. Sometimes jogging can be enjoyable. You get that runner's high. Sprinting all out for that period of time hurts, and you start feeling like you're coughing up blood. And it is literally that. But for me, it was, I had a, you know, kind of a time frame of where I wanted to kind of get to with my ultimate goal of being able to kind of Kaiser Soze, you know, at the end and set up all this legacy stuff and then go off into the, you know, into the mist somewhere, never to be seen again, with my legacy just being able to live on. And so for me, it was worth that sprint. On the day to day right now, I very much am more cognizant of the time and more cognizant of my energy. And I definitely have to do that to be effective at what, you know, the systems that we have in place now, to be more effective in my relationship. There's sacrifices that took place in those 5 years. I had a good relationship with my wife and kids, but I didn't have the relationship that I wanted purely because of time. I didn't have enough time with them. Right. And so there were definitely sacrifices there. The upside of it now is I have a ton more time with them. And I think that short-term sprint for me is paying off for that long-term. But even on the day-to-day, I'm very cognizant of what activities I place earlier in the day versus later in the day too. I know where my energy peaks are for sure. Mm-hmm. You know, things like this, conversations like this, I want, you know, as much as possible to have earlier in the day if we can. You know, I don't usually do a whole lot of like emails or anything earlier in the day because I can handle those later when I'm spent, you know. Mm-hmm. So I pay attention to what activities still need to get done, but at what time it makes more sense to do it. Cause I know, you know, just my mental cognition declines, you know, later in the day too. So I'm going to put things that don't require as much of me later on too. I'm cognizant of that as well. Very much so.
Right. What's an example of like what you consider a high leverage activity that you really want to strike at with like the prime amount of energy? in the typical things that you have to do? I know there's always novel things coming up, but what's an example of that for you in your work?
Yeah, I think anything where I've got to be able to articulate the vision of what we are doing, either with Acton Academy or Apogee or the Essential 11, right? And all those are around the same thing. And they're all kind of a different avenues of the same purpose. Anytime I'm going to have to articulate that and have really deeper conversations around that, I try to push that to as close as possible, before lunch kind of thing for me. Mm-hmm. Any of that, if it's jumping on the news, jumping on the podcast, interviewing somebody, an important meeting with, you know, investors or new people in the network or whatever that looks like, I will try to do that as early in the day as possible. And to be honest too, part of what I've noticed, I'm very in tune with just how my body reacts physically to things too. If I've got a really, really important meeting or something that it's like, okay, I've got to be as sharp as humanly possible, I won't eat breakfast because I've seen how that impacts me. I almost obsessively think through some of these things. I don't express it out loud so people don't think I'm too crazy, but I, you know, the self-awareness part of that is a huge piece. So anything where I've got to articulate that mission is going to go earlier in the day. Those are going to be the most, you know, the high leverage activities. Everything else is not that I do, but most of anything else can be done on autopilot for the most part in my brain.
Gotcha. So you don't eat breakfast. And now these are just like selfish curiosities. I hope people listening are interested. Are you fasting, intermittent fasting? Is that what you do?
Yeah, not even from a trendy point. It's more from a, the meticulous self-awareness of how my body reacts. I haven't been sick in years. And part of that is because I'm very particular about what I do put in my body and the exercise, the amount of sleep that I get. But part of it is I also understand if I start to feel off, mental cognition's not there, feeling a little run down, maybe I was exposed to something or kind of come down with something. One of what I believe is the body's natural ways to eliminate things, I don't eat. I might take an entire day off just so my body isn't worried about digestion. It's worried about fighting off whatever I might be fighting off. And that's just something that's worked for me. And I notice the mental acuity going up if I don't have anything necessarily in the morning. So I will just take that off.
Quick follow-up. I see a lot of conversations in your podcast feed about keto. Is that your lifestyle?
You know, what's interesting is it's kind of like how my speaking career went, right? I ended up doing out of the 350, 360 keynotes consultations that I've gotten to do over the last 6 or 7 years, probably 50 of those have been with banks and in the banking industry. And that's more, it was just a product of, I got a client early on in that industry. I helped them quite a bit. And then they introduced me to more people in their field and said, you've got to bring this guy in. Right. And so it wasn't that I necessarily set out to do banking. That's just kind of where it landed. So I connected with people in the health and wellness field years ago, because that was something I was, you know, particularly interested in for myself. We started diving down the keto rabbit hole more for my wife than anything else. It was what we found would actually cure her migraines. She would get severe migraines where she was out for an entire day throwing up, couldn't see, couldn't think, almost looked like she had a stroke. So going down that keto rabbit hole actually helped eliminate those for her, which nothing else ever had. So I just developed a network around that and just, you know, I've known a lot of good people in there. I'm not necessarily keto myself, although I do respond pretty well to it. Yeah. It's a great question.
I was just curious. And this is actually a good place to take us to talking a little bit about the Essential 11 as we move towards our main topic. So the Essential 11, we talked about it last time, but it's a podcast where you amend anything I say, but you interview high performers and super achievers. You ask them questions, taking apart and understanding their success.
Yep.
And that's something that you would like to, like I do with School Sucks, be able to pass along to people who are younger and still in this development process, trying to figure a lot of these things out.
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's exactly right. So it was very much a tribe of mentors, you know, Tim Ferriss's book kind of approach, where we actually took advantage of a research group that we work with and had 1,500 youth from all over the United States. And They were ages 13 to 22. And we just said, hey, we're going to go to high performers. We're going to ask them your questions so that you get your questions answered. Kind of what are the questions you want? You know, and we said, you know, give us 10. And so they put those questions down, and we had the group kind of cultivate, you know, really the top questions that we got from people. And so those are the questions that we use as the framework for the conversation.
Okay. So something that we, at this point, like joke about on my show pretty frequently is getting too caught up in this kind of personal development stuff, right?
Yeah.
Where it's almost like you can just, there's always a new app. There's always a new hack. I know neither of us like that word. People do also kind of want gurus or whatever the new, you know, the new innovation is and an idea, and people will, because I send out a signal that this is obviously one of the pillars of the content we create, it can become kind of a messy thing to try and integrate properly. So you talk to all these different people, like I'm talking to you right now and talked to Zach Slaback 5 days ago. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I'm always having people like that on my show. And then there's this question of the integration of personal development advice or tactics or strategies or principles. And, you know, I could go in and read, somebody could say, oh, Brett, you know, you always talk about this stuff. You've got to read this book. And I'll pick up this book and start reading it and be like, dude, don't mess me up with what I'm already doing. Now I've got to integrate, you know, the thing that you're doing because this is like the hottest new thing that everyone wants me to read about. So you have to, as the host of Essential 11, like I do with my show, curate, and it's a hard thing to do as meticulously as I'd like to do it, but you have to like curate all of this different information, and you have to put a lot of trust in your audience, especially when you want to have a young audience, of saying, look, you're going to be able to parse through this. You can think for yourself. Take what you want, leave the rest behind. I built a product in 2019. It was a summit called Ideas into Action for our university, which is kind of a separate spinoff from School Sucks. And it was about like, look, here are people that I really respect in the, you know, the media world, content creation, people who are good at taking in information effectively, integrating it, assimilating it, and then outputting it in ways that, you know, win hearts and minds. So Tom Woods is there. Michael Malice is there. My friend Kevin Zach is there. I'm sure a few other names you would recognize. And I didn't say, look, you know, I understand that if you give somebody like a perfect methodology step by step, you can sell that for thousands of dollars because people, it is almost like the super hack, right? Yeah. It's all here. You don't have to think. I don't want to say people who would spend thousands of dollars on a course don't want to think for themselves. I'm certainly not implying that. But there is a kind of comfort in like, you know, we're all schooled. We all spent 15,000 or most of us spent 15,000 hours in this place. And there still is this, you know, kind of fragile part that in the face of a challenge goes, okay, they reach out their hand, like somebody take my hand and lead me where I'm supposed to go. Like even if we don't act on that, that impulse is still there. So I do often worry, like when I put out content, like how does it integrate with other things that we've talked about? And when I take in new content, I always say, is this something that I can integrate? So I'd just like to hear, because you obviously are trying to pass this stuff on to younger people through Essential 11, the practice of integrating different concepts in personal development or personal growth.
Yeah, that's a really good question, man. And one of the things you touched on briefly there was the trust element, right? I trust that people inherently have the ability to think for themselves. I just think we are in a culture, and school being one of the, you know, a big piece of that culture that sucks that ability away, or at least masks that ability. And we have to fight through to figure out how to find that again, you know. But I do trust that most things in the human experience, really, when you get down to it, really are simple. They really are basic. I think, you know, even when we talk personal development and self-development and personal growth and growth mindset and all that kind of stuff, there's some basic things that I think all of our guests in Essential 11 will touch on. At the root of it is the way you show up and treat other people, you know, always matters. Doing something that you're excited about, bringing, you know, going after a purpose and taking action versus sitting back and waiting for the world to come to you. You know, that matters. Pay attention to your health. That matters. You know, there's some very basic foundational things that they all speak on. And so my goal with that is quite little, because that's, again, that's always really what it comes back to. They're just expressing their experience of those and how that's played out for them. And, you know, my goal is never, I don't fully agree with everything every single one of my guests say, but that's not the kind of show it is. It's not for me to go and argue with them about stuff. It's to get their insight. They're obviously doing good things, so I want them to be able to share that. And my goal is that with everybody who's listening, what I believe will likely happen, because I've seen this play out in my decades in education, is that if I've got a listener who's paying attention and you know, he or she gets on there and listens to, you know, Patrick Bet David talk, and might be like, okay, that was cool. But, you know, and then they hear Seth Godin and they're like, oh yeah, that was, you know, that was kind of cool too. And then, you know, Gary V gets on and okay, all right. But then all of a sudden Mark Bell's on there. We got freaking Ted Nugent coming up, right? Who knows what the hell he's going to say, right? We got all of a sudden something they've heard a million different times. For some reason, the way that particular person said it, that particular person's experience resonated with that young person and then just gets them to take a step forward.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, that's all it is. They've heard this, a lot of the same things before, but for some reason, that person had a piece of, there was a piece of that person's humanity that really spoke to that particular listener. And all of a sudden that became where something clicked for them and a message clicked. And that's what I'm trying to do. I mean, it's really that.
It's like know, like, and trust, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, my role is I can go and find people who are, you know, these super achievers and be a conduit and say, hey, person who thinks they totally can't do this thing, I kind of think I couldn't do this thing. And here's somebody who did this thing. Yeah. So let's set up this chain where we kind of communicate that information. And the part with younger people, I mean, I guess most of us had this experience where we were given no invitation to figure things out, to build our own maps, to navigate our own challenges. So people going out and trying to like put their own picture, integrate their own picture of how to do this or how to do that, it feels in the world that we live in like I'm doing something that's out of place by inviting people of any age to do that, right? Yeah. Just because that's how we're basically indoctrinated to
think. We are indoctrinated, and we're indoctrinated into thinking that you got to you know, you got all these people, you better listen to them, otherwise you're in this world of figuring everything out yourself and you're this unique snowflake that's never had this particular situation. And you are unique, but there are so many people that have gone before you that have done things that and that are no better, that they're no smarter than you, they're no happier than you, they didn't come from a better situation from you. There's so many of these walking, living, breathing, speaking roadmaps out there of how to do this thing we call life that eventually you're going to find somebody that goes, you go, okay, I kind of relate to that. And you can take a look at the roadmap they've paved, and not saying that that's going to be your roadmap too, just saying that you can start to follow those habits of them before you. I have 11 rules in my house. We've got them up. It's something that we came up with as a family. It's something that it's kind of our creed, you know, our code that we live by. I hold my family to it. They hold me to it. And I got called out the other day by my 7-year-old. She's like, hey, you're not living up to number 6, you know? And so it's like, that's what we want them to do. Mm-hmm. Number one in our house is be a copycat. That's the first rule in our house. And what we mean by that is you are the only you. There is no other you. We know that. Like, there is no combination of DNA that will ever amount or ever has amounted to who exactly you are in your specific journey. But in order to not get wrapped up into the, you know, seemingly like freaking esoteric challenge that this is, like, how do I even start to tackle that? You look at the people that you admire something about their journey, and you don't copy them and try to be them. But you take the piece you admire or the path that they took, and you just start walking down that path.
Your Michael Jordan example.
That's it.
Yeah, in the last show. Yeah.
That's exactly right. You just start moving down that path. That's it. And then that's going to present more open doors, more opportunities, more self-awareness around you. You keep your eyes open to other people. And, you know, a path is never straightforward, and you're going to take some steps forward. You're going to go to the side. You're going to come backwards a little bit. You're going to go forward. I mean, it's a funky mess, but the whole point is that you are moving forward, and you can use those people as these guideposts, you know, to develop kind of your own journey. There's no straight, pretty arc. But all of those ugly arcs are exponentially better than the dot that just sits right there where it is, waiting for the world to come to them.
Okay, so great transition, right? Because there are like the people example, but then there is the people example, but then there's the kind of archetypical example where, you know, one of the promises that you make at Acton Academy when people enroll is that, you know, your child will begin a hero's journey. Mm-hmm. You know, so we know the hero's journey from film, from stories.
Yes.
We know it from marketing, right? Like, this is my hero's journey as the marketer. This is me taking you on the hero's journey as the person I'm marketing to. But one of the things that I want to talk about is like how much you go into detail with that, like laying out, making explicit. We're already like talking about it. Yeah. I think we have been for a while as far as, you know, helping kids go there and advice to go there. Yeah. But some things that I wanted to get at are like, how can parents of home-educated or unschooled young people help foster or even guide this process? And I think the way to start talking about that is, like, how do you lay this out to the students at Acton? I know you can do it in a simple three-act structure, departure, initiation, return, but it has, you know, I think each act has four parts.
Components. Yep. Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
So let's talk about how you do that.
So when we have our open houses, right? So at this point, we've got enough awareness where we've got a kind of a funneling system that's in place for families that want to come in, students that want to come in and be a part of this, and families that want to be, you know, a part of this. And so one of the things that we do at this initial info session is we talk about the hero's journey. And I say, look, I'm not going to tell you that we go through all these 12 steps, because that gets overwhelming to try to peg everything you're doing into these entire 12 steps that are, that's really like this, it's a circle, right? I mean, and that's great. And so we have that from a visual perspective, we do have that up so people can dive in. That is, you know, present on our campus, so people can kind of see that. But the way I try to break it down for everybody in the most basic sense is that our focus is going to be on self-awareness, self-confidence, and personal responsibility for taking things forward. We try to keep it this very, very basic sort of deal. We say you're going to get self-awareness by trying as many things as possible. We are going to try to expose you. It is like going to the buffet to figure out what your favorite food is. You can't go to one restaurant. I can't just go to a sushi restaurant and think I'm going to walk out of there and know, if I've never eaten food, what my favorite restaurant or my favorite food is. I can pick my favorite food out of that, but I don't know what my favorite food is because I haven't tried other foods. So that self-awareness piece is by exposure to as much as humanly possible for those young people, as many disciplines, as many potential career opportunities, is like as much as humanly possible. That's where our badges, that our individual projects, our quests. That's why academia is such a small part of what we do, because we are just trying to like, look, there's this whole world out there. We want you to try all of it. Because even if you go, okay, I just created a stop motion video right there and that sucked and I hated it. Cool. Mm-hmm. That's self, you know that. And that's great. That's great knowledge to have. It's much better than going, I don't know, I've never done it. You know what I mean? So there's the self-awareness piece of that. There's the self-confidence piece of that. We believe self-confidence doesn't actually come through until you've done those things, like, you know, crossing the threshold, going against the tests, the allies, the enemies, the, you know, approaching the inmost cave, the ordeal, like all of those hero's journey components. We believe that self-confidence is built really on the other side of battling those dragons. Mm-hmm. So that's where we increase the stakes. So not only are you going to be exposed to all of these things, you're going to be exposed to all of these elements, all of these disciplines, but you're going to have a deadline. Now you're going to have some self-imposed goals every week, and you're going to have this deadline, this looming thing called an exhibition. Mm-hmm. We're going to invite friends and family in, and you're either going to show out and show what you've been working on, or you're going to fall on your own sword and make it very obvious that you put no effort. Whatever that is, you rise and fall with your own effort. And we're going to try to keep the stakes really, really high for them, because what we see is at the end of that, when they present themselves well and they've put forward all this work, that's where true self-confidence comes in, because they've actually done some things. They'll get the awareness of, yes, I liked that, I didn't like that, but they get the confidence from having pushed through something they didn't necessarily know
right
that they were going to be able to be okay with it. And then that second or that third part is kind of that personal responsibility for us. We want to continue to just provide tools and systems. This goes back to me being a systems person. Our whole shtick is that we are trying to get as many systems in place that make us as irrelevant as possible. Parents should be doing the same thing. You know, it's that Frederick Douglass quote of building up strong kids so you don't have to repair broken men. You, if you're parenting, even in this, in an unschooling or homeschooling sort of deal, you should be at least providing enough systems that you can back off, let the young, trust the young person to take on those systems and figure out how to move things forward. So we provide those systems in place to keep everybody personally responsible for what they are doing, and understanding they get to play the victim and they're in control of whatever they can control. When those components are in place, then inherently we get to that, you know, that return with the elixir. They've got the self-awareness, the self-confidence, they've got that sense of personal responsibility and saying, I'm in control of whatever I can control in my life. And then, you know, more often than not, that person wants to come back and kind of do that return where they're giving back to others around them. That's also partially built in the systems. They're inherently working with other, you know, other students on campus, especially those that are younger. They're serving as mentors to them. So that's, you know, it's kind of those three things that we try to present as the package. We believe all 12 of those steps in the circle kind of stem from.
So I hate to get political. Boy, yeah. I mean, especially in times like these, I hate to get political, but if we just kind of go to that first act where people are teens and, you know, you're trying to introduce these ideas and maybe intervene in a lot of the cultural forces that they would just be encountering. And I know, like, the installation of political thinking and like very and cultural programming starts at a much younger age now. But you think about where it started for us, we enter adulthood, and I don't mean like legal adulthood. I mean like actually, you know, being able to drive a car and have a job. Sure. Like our nature is telling us we're an adult, even if school is still telling us we're a child. And we're raised kind of in this obliviousness, or at least we were. Yeah. And when the call to adventure comes for a lot of us, it's like leaving the obliviousness of high school and going to college. Mm-hmm. So we go from, you know, as the hero's journey lays it out, no awareness of the problem to increased but still limited awareness mm-hmm. of the problem. And then, I mean, I remember for me, this was in the 90s, getting like very uncomfortable and agitated with like, why wasn't I told all these things about how the world is? But yeah. I certainly, there was, you know, still the refusal of the call to actually do anything about it. And, you know, the politics that gets installed, now it's like called social justice in college. It's there's this terrible reluctance to actually change yourself, to actually take ownership, to take control. So it's somebody do something, or who's to blame? And then people kind of get stuck in the refusal of taking their own hero's journey as a result of, you know, kind of getting blindsided. Like the mentor comes along at the time when, you know, naturally a person like wants to go somewhere and goes, oh, just become a useful idiot for the stuff that, you know, I'm telling you, and don't actually go on some kind of autonomous quest. Yeah. So, I think this is really great. And it's just surprising how many people are not talking about at least introducing this concept, this Campbell concept, to young people. So I think it's great.
It is great. And it's, you know, there's so many different reasons. I think with that, there's, you know, there all the big systems, I think, are set up in a way, and this always pisses people off. But I think when you look at a giant system, whether it's a religious system, a medical system, an educational system. You look at all those systems that have their schools in place to teach others how to perpetuate the system. What, you know, we build is our reliance as a culture, as a human species, on a system. And we, you know, we lend credence and authority to anybody who shouts the loudest. And ultimately what we end up doing is we eliminate people's understanding of kind of what humanity should be able to do. And I think probably did at one point of relative, you know, going after relative sovereignty. And we have more and more become just a populace everywhere that lives in fear. Mm-hmm. And that's what I have noticed, is even as we come outside of that and say, look, we are here to open doors. I'm not here to push you through a door. I'm going to open a door for you. The fear that surrounds that is amazing, especially when you start challenging those systems. When I say to a teacher or an administrator, hey, let me tell you about Acton Academy. Let me tell you what we're doing. And by the way, we don't have any teachers. I don't care if anybody's credentialed. I don't even say the word standards. If we talk about standards, we're talking about character. We're not talking about academia. Mm-hmm. There's a fear that comes out, and it's like, all of a sudden it's like, no, man, it's a personal attack. And if I was to listen to you any further, like you're going to start to make me question this relative, I'm just been kind of going with the flow and doing what I'm told. And if you're going to make me question that, then all of a sudden the responsibility is going to come back on me to have to act in accordance with what I think about this. And I don't even want to take on the possibility that I may be doing something that I have an internal dialogue against. So I won't even consider it. And just because you brought it up and you even started to make me consider it, you're the enemy. You're the jerk. It's a very interesting thing. And I'll do the same thing in the medical field too, and just go, okay, well, let's talk about, health as it is really, everybody's talking about, we want to talk about health and public health. Well, maybe health does start with personal responsibility. Maybe these organizations, CDC and WHO, maybe some of the advice they're given isn't necessarily beneficial. And it's the same thing. It's an attack there. So it's a very interesting scenario. More people live in fear than not. And that's why I've gotten very comfortable with just, look, I'm going to open those doors. I'm going to be the Morpheus that just goes, hey, think about this, red pill, blue pill. I'm not saying I have all the answers, but let me invite you to come explore an alternative side and see if you're willing to take that next step forward and have some more questions. Most people aren't.
Do you think you're talking about something that's like more the human condition, or do you think you're talking about like a byproduct of the world in which we live over the last 5 or 10 years? And the reason why I ask is one of the comments that I've made frequently on my show is that the technology that we use currently to communicate has made people's identities much more intertwined with their mm-hmm. politics. Mm-hmm. So when you talk about, like, now this was always true, like, I don't even necessarily think it's a bad thing. Like, mm-hmm. I lived in Western Pennsylvania, spent a lot of time recently this year in Western Pennsylvania. Yeah. And there's a culture here that I really love, right? Where people worked at, they worked in the oil industry, they worked in the steel industry, they did mining, sure. They worked at the, Sylvania light bulb plant. And, a lot of this is like union creating a culture, but people identify with their work in ways that are prideful. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. It gets a little dicey when, you do start talking to people who work in government, because then, like especially education, because now there are political implications of that, where it's all every political conversation, if you're like more liberty minded, is like, can we just skip to the part where you're pointing a gun at me to get what you want, basically? Yep. And I think people feel that subtext, right? Yeah. Like, politics is about war by other means. How do we impose our wills on each other in a way that we've, for some reason, agreed is sophisticated and nonviolent? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So it's really been a difficult conversation to have with people like teachers, but it's gotten really tricky for everybody to have the humility and the curiosity to be able to unblend their identity from their politics. And because the politics are like the worst features of humanity, they're also like a lot of the worst features of our personalities. So it becomes a very dangerous game to play with people when something is like you're criticizing something and there's political implications of doing it. And this has gotten so much worse in our world for the, 20 years ago, as I always say, you could have a conversation about getting on an airplane. with somebody, and it didn't have to become, there was no threat of it becoming a political conversation about should we have the TSA or not.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
10 years ago, you could have a conversation about, I'm going to go get a big gulp soda in New York City without it being, but because politicians get more and more involved in everything as time goes on, more and more things become political topics.
Yeah.
So education has been that, you know, really since the 80s, really since, you know, Reagan and A Nation at Risk and going after the Department of the brand new Department of Education and all that. So if you've learned anything from talking to teachers, which you've done a lot of, that we could apply to how tied up everybody's politics seems to be with their identity. So everything seems like a personal attack today. I would love advice on that if you have any from, I guess, primarily from talking to teachers, or the medical field is applicable to that too.
It's an emotional thing for people, sir, but you're right. It's, and it has been exacerbated by our culture. I think it is sort of a, you know, this fear-based adherence to a system, you know, I think is somewhat inherent in the human condition, because it allows us to take the stress of sovereignty off of us a little bit, but it does create this emotional thing that's been capitalized upon by politics. And the easiest way for me to get out of it has just been to literally be apolitical, because you're right, everything's been politicized. I had a buddy that went and got a COVID, you know, was early on, got a COVID test, I mean a couple months into the whole thing, and the doctor was like, hey, I, you know, I kind of have some protocol I'd like to maybe recommend to you, but before I do, you know, are you Democrat or Republican? It's like, what the hell, why does that have anything to do with your medical condition? Like, why does that have anything to do with health? You know, like what's the deal? But that everything is politicized in that regard. And it was very, it was very interesting to me. We hosted Joe Jorgensen here this year, who, you know, was the libertarian candidate for president. And she came to our campus and did her Northern California kind of speaking event here, and got to go out to dinner with her afterwards and had some good conversation. And it was very interesting at that event itself. I had at the same event, I had somebody who came up to me as we were wrapping up, and they said, hey, you know, while we've been sitting here doing this, I hosted the event. I was kind of the, like the MC for it. So they're like, you know, as she was speaking, I was kind of looking you up and noticing the way that you kind of run this school. And this is very interesting, this Acton Academy and the student driven sort of thing. And, you know, as I look at that, I can't help but think that you're more left leaning and probably very, you know, democratic and maybe even kind of leaning harder left on, like maybe even like on a socialist sort of scale. So it's very right. So they looked at that and they go, okay, well, here's this political box that he fits into. So I had somebody say that to me. I had somebody at the wrap up come up to me and say, hey, this is really cool what you're doing with the school. I loved hearing all this stuff. You know, but hearing how this school is very pro business, seeing you here in your jeans and sport coat and your beard, you know, you're obviously very right leaning, very, you know, Trump supportive. So they looked at some of the same stuff, put me in a different political box. And then I had others that went, obviously you're middle of the road libertarian. You've got the libertarian candidate here. Thank you for being libertarian and being on the side of reason, kind of in the middle of all this. Everybody wanted to put me in this political box. At the end of the day, I don't get involved in politics at all.
Oh yeah.
And this pisses a lot of people off, but I don't get involved in politics at all because it's something that is outside the realm of my control.
That's a really, really good point. And anytime I think I find myself in one of those situations, just as far as like sphere of control is concerned, anytime I'm talking about something political or cultural and I find there's like a should or a shouldn't, like people should do this or they shouldn't do that, I'm like, oh, that means I have no power here. And it doesn't mean like I won't weigh in on it in the platform that I have, but I'm certainly also not going to lose sleep about it.
Lose sleep about it. And that's exactly it. And that's what allows me. And that's what, so now I'm not saying that that's my staff, that they're all in that same boat and apolitical. And for the most part, they're not. But I do have staff that is more right leaning. I have staff that's more left leaning and some that would claim to be, you know, kind of in the middle, classical liberal, libertarian, whatever. But the way we approach it with our young people is that they should not know where we stand on anything. Hmm. And that's politics or anything else. Our job, and it's so it makes it very easy for me, being somebody that doesn't get involved in politics at all. I don't have a pony in the race, man. So I have no, you know, agenda as far as pushing a student one way or the other. And I'm not going to try to lead them with my questions to get to my consensus. And as much as possible, that's something we work on as a staff to, that's part of the reason we don't answer questions. That's part of the reason that, you know, we try to bring the Socratic method in to just continuously push back as to why. And I will always try to bring up as close to the opposite side of whatever point was just made as possible. And me staying neutral on most topics allows me to be able to do that without giving away an emotional cue, so that the student then just has to think, and I trust them truly to get to the decision that makes the most sense for them, where we don't negotiate as character. Character matters. You're going to be, you need to be respectful. You need to treat other people the right way. I don't care if you're lean right, left, up, down, or you're not leaning at all. Treat other people the right way. But your ideas should be freely shared. And I'm just going to push back on them so that at the end of the day, I've done my best to make sure you believe whatever it is you believe, because you actually believe it versus somebody else told you to believe it.
Yeah. The Socratic approach. I also like the Columbo approach. So you encounter people, you're talking about this event with Joe Jorgensen, and people, they don't know how to like actually say this as explicitly as they need to, but they're like, can you show me where your handles are so I can pick you up and put you in the box I need you to go in?
100%.
That's kind of it. So I was talking to a mutual friend of ours who just moved to a new city. And, was talking about meeting people of the opposite sex. Yeah. I said, you're going to encounter people in a city. You're going to encounter people who have political and cultural views that you're going to find frustrating.
Sure.
So you should work on maybe creating some pattern interruptions. So we talked about the Columbo approach, but also this, if somebody tries to take the conversation in the political, starts talking about politicians, you go, geez, all those people just sound crazy to me. Boy, what do they think? That's wild. But also taking the real inquisitive approach is helpful as well, and just trying to create pattern interruptions and really trying to like depoliticize and rehumanize things for people and like problem solve together instead of just labeling, boxing. These are my handles. Pick me up and put me here. Like actually trying to get to the bottom of a person's needs and wants and have a conversation that's far more connected.
That's right. And if you've got an agenda where you need to get them over to your specific side, you're inherently going to be emotionally wrapped up in how you attack that, and you'll never get there. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the whole, I love that, the Columbo approach, and it's my wife and I were talking about that not too long, because her parents are freaking phenomenal people. They're great, but they're very much on a different side of a lot of different topics than we are, which is great, which is fine. They're phenomenal people. So they will say things that, I know she doesn't agree with and I don't personally agree with. Mm-hmm. I don't get emotionally wrapped up into it. I don't take it as a personal attack. It's a difference of ideas. And so I do take the Columbo approach a lot of times and just go, oh man, cool. I'm curious, what do you think about? And I just try to take their side, try to get their explanation of it. I don't take any personal offense to it. I hate this. That's another term I hate, is this whole triggered. You're not a gun. Nobody can trigger you. You allow yourself to be triggered. Mm-hmm. That's within your control. So, I remain emotionally neutral on that. And you end up having some good conversations, get their side of it. At the end of the day, maybe you don't agree, but it's all good.
Well, yeah. And I would even say, I'm not even disagreeing with you, but the trigger idea, something can happen, and I've had things happen and gone, boy, I'm really pissed off right now by this thing that just happened. But you still, if you're being conscious, you can still choose your response. I don't nail that 100% of the time, be honest. But, if you practice that, it's okay to have even an irrational, emotional reaction to a thing. But you can, with practice, you can certainly choose your response and
you can choose
not appear triggered.
That's right. And you can choose what you're emotionally responsive to at this point, because I'm with you, man. I don't want to make it sound like I'm this guru that's got it all friggin' nailed down, because that's crock. But where I can tell you where I do falter, where I need to get better, it's only in the places where I'm very much emotionally invested, right? So it's going to be when something, right now, it's my daughters, when they're fighting with each other about stuff that's ridiculous and stupid. Like that's my, emotional. It's like, geez, like you guys have, things are great. You're literally two of the, most wonderful humans I know. And you treat everybody else the right way. You're super responsible. You guys are I could not have imagined better young ladies, but you treat each other like garbage, and that will set me off. And I've got to I got to pull away, but it's because I'm emotionally invested in them as human beings. Right. If it's something, you know, it's possible at this point for something on the school side for act, you know, if something doesn't go exactly the right way, or, you know, we're developing our new campuses and something on the city side, that's a major hiccup on the development of our whatever that is. I can, it's because I'm emotionally invested there. I can usually get out of that quicker though. But for everything else, that's just being aware of what you truly emotionally invested in gives you foresight into what kind of things you just need to really be cognizant about your emotional control going into.
Absolutely. So look, I got one more hero's journey question before I run out of time for today. You encounter kids from all different places, all different backgrounds, all different, you know, issues, emotional landscapes, all that. Dealing with reluctance, right?
Yeah.
It was interesting. You know, we talked months ago about this and the world changed a lot between our two conversations. And I said, we're going to you know, do this hero's journey conversation. And the world has transformed dramatically since that time. Fear is way up, right? A lot of the messaging, like I've always said, school makes good on its promise to deliver good citizens. It certainly does that. Facebook, which I'm about to delete, showed me a memory yesterday of a show that I posted 7 years ago called What We've Learned from Zero Tolerance. And it's a picture of these militarized police, like basically hovering over, you know, students. And then, like, I scrolled down and there was a picture of Washington, D.C. This was yesterday, and it didn't look too different, right? So, school will create expectations or tolerances of, you know, the world out there. And, you know, so with the things going on in school right now, it does concern me what society might look like in 5 years. Don't look at each other. Be afraid, be afraid, be afraid. All of that, it's certainly not going to help with a healthy society. But, you know, even going forward in the short term, you are, in even in the past, you've encountered kids with all these different backgrounds, all these different resistances. How do you counsel through reluctance? Like, because you must have encountered it with students who they're not ready, they're afraid, they don't know what to do, they don't know how to take the next step with this path that you're encouraging.
That's, man, it is not just a kid thing. That is a human thing. I, you know, the adults that I talk to, I spend as much time working with our parents in this community, and we've got brave parents. You don't come to an Acton Academy without being braver than the normal parent, because you are bucking a trend, you're getting outside. And I still spend time going, hey, just like, you've got one shot at this whole thing, man. You're either living or you're existing. And right now you're kind of retreating into an existence versus, you know, moving forward on a life. The reluctance is there too, begin because of that fear, right? Yeah. And what I've realized that there is no blame. It's like anything else in humanity, man. There is no blanket answer that I can give that is going to get somebody out of it, because what they're looking for is they're looking for motivation. Yeah. They're looking for a motivation to get out of a rut, to get unstuck, to take that, you know, step into life. And what they really need is discipline. Sometimes it's a discipline to be motivated. It's a discipline. I mean, there are some young people, I've got young men that I mentor right now, where they can get themselves super fired up for a day if they watch, you know, some of these motivational YouTube videos that are really, really good, put together really well. Like, they can watch one of those in the morning and they're ready to go crush it. But then the nighttime comes, the energy starts to wane, the natural cycle of, you know, their circadian rhythm, they get tired and the motivation is not quite there at the night. So then they can go to bed and they get up the next day and they're like, eh, I'm not there. So what have they had to do? They've had to discipline themselves to watch another video in the morning, discipline themselves to motivate themselves every single day. Right. And so it's, what is that specific discipline you need? That's why we utilize the mod schedules we do, just to go, hey, if you map this out when you're in this solid mental state, man, and you map all of this out, and even when motivation's waning, you just remain disciplined to that path of what I need to do moving forward. That's as close to a universal response or a universal step, I guess I should say, as I've been able to even find, because it's so different for everybody. Everybody's got their hiccups of why they, you know, why they're reluctant. But It is something that I continue. Well, I mean, we continue to have that conversation even here. Sometimes it's like, wait, why is this person being reluctant? We're literally giving them all the tools. So what is the fear? What is that point of fear that we are missing here with that young hero? What is it right now? Is it something going on at home? Is it something? What is it? Like, we're consistently having that conversation, and the answers sometimes to get them stuck, you know, unstuck are not the same.
Yeah.
But man, that is the universal question.
Well, I guess it's kind of, geez, maybe I read Atomic Habits for a reason. It is kind of like a self-directed, like self-chosen, intrinsically yes. motivated systems installation kind of thing, where you go to school, it's like, tough luck, buddy. These are the systems we're installing. But yeah. with self-awareness and like bringing that stuff out, being conscious of that stuff and saying, yep. where do you want to go? What do you want to do? More importantly, like, how do you want to feel? Because yes. having good systems in place at the end of the day, you know, yep. think about just the building blocks that days are towards the future. Yep. At the end of the right. day, if you follow systems that are self-nurturing and yep. self-honoring, you go to bed and you go, geez, that was a great day. And you string a few yes. of those together, and then those systems become ingrained.
And that's it. And yeah. things start to change. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's as close to an answer as we can get. You know, we always tell our young heroes, look, you are consistently being brainwashed by somebody, whether yeah. it's your parents, whether it's your friends, whether it's the media, whether it's social media, whether it's the culture, or it's you. So yeah. might as well make it you. Might as well pick and choose exactly what that brainwash looks like and make that brainwash exactly the, you know, have it come from the person that you want to be, and those pieces, components of others that you like, that you want to integrate in yourself, have those be the things that are brainwashing you every single day. Live, you know, moving towards those ideals. And, you know, things, there's no such thing as perfection, but you can always chase it, and things get pretty dang good. You know, with that kind of self-awareness.
Well, we did one of my favorite things. We had a conversation that I really loved having while we had it, and I think it's good for all segments of our audience. Like, everybody can use what we talked about today. So thank you so much. And how can people in my audience learn more about your work?
I appreciate that, man. And the honor was definitely mine. It's always fun to talk to you too, man. And I always
thank
appreciate
you.
The work that you're doing too. Very much on the same team. So Acton Placer, you know, ACTONPLACER.com. You can learn about our campuses. Apogee Strong, it's APOGEEstrong.com is the mentorship program, and the Essential 11 podcast. All of those are all around that same goal of helping our young people and helping them on their hero's journey. So, you know, I'm honored if anybody goes to any of those places and just wants to learn more, and I'm available to be reached out on all those.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thank you so much. I look forward to doing it again.
Pleasure, brother.
Ride my soul, take this place on this train.